Ira, tell me why you trust Bill Curry Ford and General Manager Sean Sullivan.
Well, I'm talking about personal experience here. I'm not talking about reading somebody else's reviews. We've had a cherry red Ford Escape for almost a year. Absolutely zero issues, zero problems. Brought it down when it needed an oil change. Fabulous showroom, great service department, rides like a dream. And it's been a fantastic experience. Not only that, but I love talking to Sean Sullivan about the Bucks. You know, he challenges me. He challenges some of my assumptions. He's got a very strong point of view, bleeds Buck, and would love you to come in, get a deal done. He's very, very flexible with pricing, financing, insurance. It's an all-purpose stop.
BillCurryFord.com, Bill Curry Ford, 60 years, mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway.
What is going on with this guy? Cut and dry, outplayed. But damn it, can you cover him? And more importantly, can you tackle him after you make the catch? You just made Goff look like Johnny Unitas. What are you doing, Bowles?
Buccaneers fans, it is that time again. Week 11 is in the books. The Bucs are 7-4, and the sage of Tampa Bay sports is all fired up to talk about whatever happened on Monday night against the Rams. This is the Ira Kaufman podcast, starring Ira Kaufman himself. We don't need all his names, but we do know that he's presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. He's the Baron of Big Storm Beer. Ira, we have so much to talk about today. I know you're jacked up, eating all those donuts and drinking double shots of Dunkin' Donuts coffee. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan is here. What's up, Sage?
Gentlemen, the phone calls have grinded to a halt to the agents of Messrs. Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles. No phone calls, crickets. Nothing going on. Nobody reaching out to these two guys who were the toast of the town when the Bucks were rolling. Ooh, look at the job Leftwich is doing. He's shredding the Raiders. Look at this. Look what Bowles is doing to Aaron Rodgers. It's beautiful. Gentlemen, in two out of the last 3 weeks, the Buck coaching staff has been thoroughly outclassed. Sean McVay consistently a move or two ahead of young Mr. Bowles. What are you doing, Todd? Soft zone? You're not a soft zone team. What do you want to do? Be picked apart piecemeal by Jared Goff? You just made Goff look like Johnny Unitas. What are you doing, Bowles? Soft? No pass rush? No blitz? What's going on here? I thought Cooper Kupp for a few minutes was going to catch 25 passes. What is going on around here? Leftwich, look, I know the run game was not productive. It was not. But you got to stick with it. You got a guy coming off a 198-yard game. All of a sudden, he can't run. 49 passes to Tom Brady. That's about 15 too many for my stomach. And he wasn't having a good night. And it was obvious to me and Lee DeCamper and Steve Isbitz, but it wasn't apparent. The one Mr. Byron Leftwich, I think something's going on with Brady. I think he's ornery right now. He's out of sorts. That could have contributed to the walking off the field without the handshake. Lee, and I'm not sure Brady's as mad at himself, which I think he should be after some of these decisions, as he is with some of the game planning and what's going on around him. He does not look happy, Lee.
First off, it's interesting you call Bowles young Mr. Bowles when he's probably, close to double the age of Sean McVay? McVay is a guy young. And I can't hammer Bowles. I can't hammer him. He adjusted too late, and I'd like to find out who told him to make the adjustments. Aaron, oh, you adjusted at halftime. What are you waiting for halftime for? And you waited too long. It should have been done in the first quarter, maybe the second quarter. So I'd like to find out who had the epiphany. Like, maybe we should adjust now. Really adjust on the fly. High school coaches do that. Give me a break. You know, remember how people used to rag on Shannell when Shannell said halftime is for taking a piss, not for adjusting? All of a sudden now it's kosher with Bowles, but Shannell got criticized for, oh my gosh, gas, he adjusted on every series. We adjusted at halftime. Well, you waited. You got caught with your pants down. But if I can't kill balls, second half wasn't on the defense. You know, Arians said this. Someone's got to be an adult in the room. Arians basically said Brady calls his own plays from the sideline. During when the defense is on the field, they go over the next series. Someone's got to be the adult in the room. Said Tom, don't know why, but you can no longer hit long passes. Stop it. So short, so intermediate, quit throwing long passes. Brady got into trouble Monday night, not for throwing intermediate passes, not for throwing short passes. He got in trouble for throwing bombs. What was it, Paul Simon once said, where did you go, Jody Maggio? I say, where did you go, Jameis Winston? People killed him for that. Staying his ass out of town. Now Brady's throwing for like 6%.
You know what, Steve? I'll say this right now based on what Lee's saying. That pass to Cameron Brate that effectively ended the game. When you put it all in perspective, you know, the importance of the game and this and that, I don't think Jameis Winston ever threw a worse pass as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer quarterback than that play, given the circumstances, Mr. Isbitt. And I'm talking about all the pick sixes. Yeah, the one in the opener against the Titans and the one that ended the season. That season was going nowhere. They finished, you know, 7-9. Where are they going? Under the circumstances, Steve, the pass and the judgment where he went with the ball, that's about as bad as it gets around here.
Yeah, you know, Ira, I got to say, I'm just not that outraged. I don't know. Maybe I've lost some of the pulse of Bucs fans, but, you know, Brady has bad games. He had bad games with the Patriots. This is not a guy who goes out there every single week and has a perfect game. He's going to have bad games. It just doesn't really surprise me at all. And it doesn't surprise me that the Bucs are cruising toward finishing 10-6. It doesn't surprise me that they went toe-to-toe with a team that's consistently good, that was in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, that they flashed up the winning percentage of Goff since he's been in the league. He's the biggest winner in the NFC since he came into the league. So they were right there, toe-to-toe. Their own mistakes really did him in. I just don't think the team is I didn't have greater expectations than this. We all said before the season that, yeah, you know, the defense would help carry them until they got late in the year. Then they would be more gelled and let the offense kind of take over. They'd win 10 or 11 games. I'm just not seeing where this team is off, Ira. Unless they start losing to a really crappy team, I just can't really get that word yet.
This game is not supposed to be put in a vacuum, Lee. And when I tell you that the Bucs are 2-4, Mr. DeKemper, against teams that are 500 or better, that includes the Bears, that doesn't give me a lot of confidence going into January. They're 4-4 in the NFC. They're beating up on the AFC West. We'll see if they can beat up on the defending Super Bowl champs and make it a perfect record in the other conference. But 2-4, is this what Buck fans signed up for when Brady came to town? Yeah, I still think they're going to make the playoffs, Lee. If they don't, we're going to have a 4-hour podcast when the season ends. Lee, they're going to make it, but this game hurts in the sense that even if they make it, which I think they will, it could cost them that cozy little number 5 spot. I mean, forget about the NFC South. I think that's a pipe dream, the way the Saints are playing and having
swept the Bucs.
Yeah, and the Bucs are playing. So we're talking wild card, and you know, I'd like to get that number 5 spot. I don't mind going to the Meadowlands or Philly or Dallas instead of going to Seattle or Green Bay. Makes a big difference. And the Rams are ahead of them right now, so I think the Bucs got to hope, Lee, that the Rams win the NFC West so they don't have to deal with them in terms of a tiebreaker, in terms of wild card seeding. Lee, I'm going to go back to something you said last week, and you didn't like saying it, but you said it. And now, Lee, it's more true than ever. You said, quote, "I'm not sure who the Bucs are. I'm not sure what to expect from week to week." Lee, it's never been truer than as we do this podcast today.
Yeah, I have to repeat that line. I don't know who the Bucs are. Are the, you know, wrote Tuesday morning, the Packers win. Looks like a dot in the rearview mirror right now. And the win over the Raiders in Vegas seems more like a vodka-fueled evening, naughty evening, with a freelance clothing optional waitress. You know, what stays in Vegas remains in Vegas.
Lee, what about Steve's point that they lost a tough game against a tough opponent? Get over it.
If it was one game. I don't see it as one game. I see a pattern. One of those patterns, which is the most glaring, was drives me bananas. It doesn't have to be Arians, Leftwich, Brady. It could be anybody. When a slob sitting on his couch to watch the game can see something, why cannot people getting paid millions of dollars who are matter 30 feet away can't see it? It's pretty obvious, really obvious, that Brady can't hit the long ball. I don't give a damn if he can hit it going up against Andrew Adams in practice. Andrew Adams is not Jalen Ramsey. For whatever reason, he can't hit it in a game. Knock it off. Quit trying to force it. And if Brady's calling that play, grab the SOB by the fast mask and look at, man, you're sending this team down the freaking sewer here. Quit throwing long balls. Quit forcing it. Knock it off. In the immortal words of John Gruden in that famous NFL Network commercial. Stop it.
Now,
you're killing the team. Because right now, Ira, I know you guys both think playoffs are a done deal. Right now, Ira, on the pile of playoff berths, I see smoke rising for the Bucks. And you want to know why I'm outraged? When you're pissing away games that, you know, come January, you're picking your nose, watch the freaking playoffs on TV when this team is loaded with talent. You damn right,
Steve, I understand. Steve, I can't even think about it because when I look at the standings, and yeah, okay, maybe three teams from the NFC make the playoffs. I understand that. But, I mean, nobody below the Bucks in the NFC South is going to make it, and nobody in the NFC East is going to make it as a wild card, and that leaves the freaking Chicago Bears. And I understand they got the tiebreaker, so it's only a one-game lead over the Bears instead of two. But, Steve, let me just ask it directly. Can you imagine a scenario in which Brady stays healthy through the end of the season and the Bucks get beaten out by the Chicago Bears? Steve, that is a disaster, an unmitigated disaster.
Absolutely not. I can't imagine it at all if Brady's healthy. Now, just want to throw some reality in here for myself, for my own reputation here. There were some outrageous things in that game that are really unfortunate because, look, Brady threw to Mike Evans, deep left. Jalen Ramsey's covering him. 50-50 ball set up. He's right where he's supposed to be, Evans. And Brady throws it out of bounds. You can't throw that ball out of bounds.
Oh, yeah.
And then to the right, he overthrows Evans. The thing should have been picked at the one-yard line. And that wasn't even the throw to make. He had one-on-one coverage with Antonio Brown on the other side. Some of the decision-making is unfortunate. It's hard to understand because we were sold, Ira, that Brady was the man who was going to make all the smart adjustments. Now, it was an oversell like we've never seen before. Brady's going to fix the run game, Brady this, Brady that. He still had bad games in New England. He's only on pace to throw 13 picks, Ira. 13 picks. I mean, that's kind of what we expected. So I can't go too crazy, but it's disturbing, and we really need to see him get better and smarter. Like Lee said, somebody has to step up and say, we're going to throw some deep shots, but we're cutting them in half. And look, playing a little shorter, Tom, is going to set up those deep shots even better. And to get totally away from the run game the way they did in a tight game, you'll almost never see a team get that far away in a tight game, right? Like Ira, you said, a guy just coming off 198 yards, and you got a coach who claims that he's committed to the run. So it's a little bit strange, a little bit upsetting. And the real thing in my craw, Ira, which we got to talk about, is this was the first time in history that Aaron Donald was kept off the stat sheet. Masterful job on Donald, and they still lost.
I didn't know that was the first time, Steve. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I looked it up today. Never has happened before. Never.
Incredible. Now, Lee, you might not agree with this, and Steve, you might not agree with it, but I made the point in my column, and I'm going to stick with it. I thought overall the five guys up front did a very, very credible job in pass protection. I give them an A. That doesn't mean Brady, under no circumstance in 49 passes, was pressured. That doesn't mean that, nor should it.
The Rams have a nice pass rush. You know, they sacked Wilson six times. And, Steve, you made a good point last week. Wilson is very sackable, as mobile as he is, but they got a good pass rush. Lee, I thought on the predominant number of Brady's pass attempts, he had very good protection. And he had a bad night on top of it, Lee. I think that makes it a lot worse. You know, the guy's averaging 4 yards a pass attempt. Goff's averaging 8. I mean, that's tough to overcome. On the other side, Lee, in terms of Bowles, maybe you got an explanation for this, but, you know, they don't try to inhibit Woods or Kupp whatsoever at the line of scrimmage when you can make contact with these guys. And, Lee, you I'm sure you were sitting there like I was that first half saying, can anybody cover Cooper Kupp? I mean, the guy's good, Lee. He's a good route runner. But, damn it. Can you cover him, and more importantly, can you tackle him after you make the catch?
Well, that was it, the tackling. I mean, Cooper Kupp's a good receiver. Good receivers, you know, the other team's getting paid, too. Good receivers can have good games. It's not out of the question. But I wasn't shocked at Cooper Kupp, but I was miffed at the lack of tackling. As far as those guys playing off the ball, you know, unfortunately, because of technology, I must have done something to my computer. I can't use Zoom. I just can't. If I use Zoom, I could have three things going. But I would love to ask Bowles, and maybe someday this virus will vanish and we'll actually have real press conferences where I can go to the press conference like, Todd, can you explain to us the advantages of keeping guys 7 yards or more away from the receiver off the ball? Because we get this question a lot from fans. We're not coaches. Otherwise, we'd be coaching. Can you explain to us the advantages of doing that? I can't do that. So, I don't know. Maybe someday I or you can. I would love to ask Bowles that. And I'm not trying to show up Bowles. I would literally like to learn this because the last three coaches we've had here have been doing the same things. And the results haven't really changed that much. You know, the Smith brothers, I call them the Smith brothers because they were brothers in lousy pass coverage. And now we got Bowles doing it. The only thing I can think of, he's trying to cover up something else. That if they do try to go press man, that they're going to get roasted like a turkey later this week. But I'm not pissed at the defense. Defense played their guts out in the second half when they made those adjustments. Again, too late, but they made those adjustments. They gave the Bucs a chance to win, and Brady shat in his pants. Period.
You know, Steve, you know what's a little disconcerting? And you know that this is coming from people that talk to the coaches that are involved, the opposing coaches. But I think it was said again last night, Steve. I don't know if Brian Greasy said it, but it's like they're picking on Jamel Dean. Wherever Jamel Dean's going, that's where they're going. Steve, you heard that last night. It's not the only time we've heard it. I thought, after about 6-7 weeks, Jamel Dean was playing very well, and they're giving him more playing time. And ever since then, he's a little bit lost at sea, Steve, so maybe that's part of the soft coverage. And, Steve, I'm not going to judge everybody by Ramsey, because Ramsey may be the best cover guy in the league. He might be. But, Steve, you see where Ramsey lines up. He's in your grill. Now, not everybody's a Ramsey, but if I'm hearing Carlton Davis is a top three corner in this league, and I'm looking and he's 9 yards off the receiver, I got a little problem with that, Steven.
I understand, Ira. Well, you didn't hear that from me about Carlton Davis with the top 10 this, and now he's an all-pro and all this other stuff that we've been told. You know, before the season, they had three 23-year-old corners that they were gifting the starting job. And, you know, I said really two of them had to step forward for them to really be able to win against good passing attacks, which are the ones that make it to the playoffs. And I think we've only seen Carlton Davis take a real step up this season, and they're paying for it now. And there's really no fix for that. Winfield, it looks like he might have hit a rookie wall a little bit. His tackling hasn't been as sure. And, you know, he's a rookie. I'm not blaming the guy, but it looks like he's just not what he was early. And kudos to Jordan Whitehead for stepping up, a huge second-half pick. They got two picks in the second half and still couldn't win the game in a tight game, which is just stunning. You know, the defense, I think they're probably playing as well as they can. And to be perfectly frank, Ira, the Bucs' pass rush of 2019 has not showed up.
You know, guys, we've been talking around this now for 11 weeks, and I'm tired of talking around it. So you guys chime in, but I'll start it off right now. Shaq Barrett, you got to do better. I'm sorry. Yeah, you get a tackle for loss. Yeah, you cover the guy in the flat. I didn't ask you for 19 and a half sacks in the preseason and in the summer. I mentioned 12. Can I get 12? Can I get 8? Yeah, you're double teamed. Yeah, teams are using resources. That's what they do when you lead the league in sacks. But, guys, I'm not seeing it. Shaq Barrett, you want a big payday, put a guy down on the ground 3 times. I mean, what is going on with this guy?
He had a fluke year last year. That's why I thought it was smart that Jason Light tagged him. And, you know, prove it. Prove that you can put a guy down on the ground, as you say, more than 10 times again. Prove it. I mean, no one. I agree with you. It's way unreasonable to have expected him to push 20 sacks again. And if he did, all the better. But that would have been unreasonable. But I thought Jason Light was smart. Tag him. Now, there are people on JoeBucksFan.com that comment regularly. Whenever I mention this, Ira, they go wild. I mean, they just want to slit my throat when I dare to suggest a sack is more important than a pressure. They just go nuts on me. It's like some of these stat geeks in baseball. You know, I gave up on baseball, okay? But 10, 15 years ago, I used to argue with them that a strikeout's one of the worst things you could do in baseball. No, 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 no. You don't know what you're talking about. Blah, 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 blah. I said, well, you know what? When I see a guy strike out, you know what I see what happens? He drags the damn bat in the dirt going back to the dugout. You put the ball in play, things happen. It's the same response I get here. Sacks are more important than the pressures. No, 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 no. You know what you're talking about. Well, I know when you sack a guy, nothing good can happen for the offense.
You're 100% right, Lee, in this respect. 75% of the time, I would say. 75%. If you get a sack during the other team's possession, that's going to end the drive. You're going to force a punt in that drive because it's going to be second and 17 or third and 15, and the odds are very, very low that you convert that and keep moving the chains. Those are drive killers, Stephen. A sack is supposed to be a drive killer, Steve.
And, you know, I think this speaks a lot to that Shaq spoiled fans last year. I really don't think he's even having a bad year. It's just not what the Bucks need it to be. He's excellent against the run. He's being paid as an edge rusher, and when a guy drops back to pass 51 times, 52 times, you got to do better than what Shaq did, and he's getting a lot of single teams as well. He's just not getting it done. But do I think at the end of the year, after they get to play punching bag Matt Ryan twice and the Lions are a mess and with what's left on the schedule, I would expect, as I sit here today, I would expect Shaq to end up with 9-10 sacks, which a couple of years ago we would have been doing cartwheels down the street for a double-digit sack guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit out there, but it's nowhere close to what they need, especially since the inside pass rush has basically disappeared since Vita Vea left and Ngamkung Suh is getting more double teams, and he seems a step slower than he was a month ago.
Lee, it would be a beautiful thing if Shaq Barrett could put some heat on Mr. Patrick Mahomes on Sunday.
It would be nice. Now, I can't remember who the running back was, but Shaq got absolutely taken out of the game by a running back. He was firing in there. Only thing he had to do was put a move on a running back. He had a clean shot at golf. This running back literally took him out. It was like, dang, man. I don't know if that would have happened last year, but you know what? Teams had all off season to prepare to stop him. And once he became a target, he hasn't been the same. He's still, like Steve said, still getting in there, still playing great against the run, still getting pressures. But you know what? Good quarterbacks, pressure doesn't matter. You got to get them down.
I thought the Bucs got a huge break last night. I don't know how you guys looked at that play. We've seen it 11 times on slow motion. But I thought that easily could have been ruled a fumble by Brady. I'm not sure he had possession of the ball, even if his arm was going forward. I'm not sure he had the football at that split second. But I guess they blew it dead because I don't even remember who ended up with the football. I think it was bouncing around the 10-yard line. I thought that was a huge break for the Bucs, and the fact that they lose the game when they get a call like that, and that that double pass by Brady. That's a stupid rule, by the way. If you do a double pass, the play's got to be whistled dead, and you got to get a penalty. It cannot count. It absolutely cannot count.
I swear on a stack of Bibles, I saw Frank Tarkin do that once.
Maybe they changed the rule, Lee?
They may have. I swear I picture him doing that along the left sideline. Where, as a road game, he was wearing a white jersey. It was on turf. I have that picture in my mind.
Steve, I can't believe the Bucs got credited with a 10-yard gain on that play because McVay declined the penalty because it didn't give him a first down. But, Steve, the Bucs get 10 yards by doing something that that is patently not in the rule book? I don't get that one, Stevie.
I always thought as long as the ball didn't go past the line of scrimmage, that was legal. You know, like the initial pass.
Well, I heard so much praise about this all-minority crew, the first time in history, and I'm looking at that play and I'm thinking to myself, oh, this great crew got the play wrong. And they might have got the Brady fumble wrong. But, you know, I'm not saying that that affected the game that much. The Bucs were outplayed, gentlemen. We call it like we see it. And the Bucs were outplayed, Steve. Cut and dry. Outplayed.
Sage, the arm, I think, was coming forward. So, you know, anybody that's up for interpretation. I did think they got that one right. When you mentioned double pass, Ira, I thought you were hearkening back to 1970. And that's what you used to call it when you know, meet the blonde in the disco and you give her two tries. You know what I'm saying?
I was flagged back in 1972, Steve. It was a yellow flag came out from the bartender.
Three strikes and you're out of the bar, Ira. Our next road game at Big Storm Clearwater, that's not until December 20th. That is going to be Fan Appreciation Day at Big Storm, Ira. We've got a whole pile of giveaways, and Florida's Elite Restoration is buying everybody a beer before kickoff. That's a 1 o'clock game against the Falcons December 20th. Going to be a lot of fun. I'll be there hassling you, Ira. But Big Storm beer, that's your beer for the holidays. Great time to stock up. Bring it to your Thanksgiving dinners. Big Storm, unbelievable all across the state of Florida.
Steve, that's a great gesture from our friends at Florida's Elite Restoration. They don't have to do that, but it's an indication of how far they'll go, you know, to earn your trust. And if you have a mold problem, don't wait on it. Call them immediately because a small problem can develop into a major hassle very quickly.
That's right, Ira. Florida's Elite Restoration is your first phone call. If you see water where it doesn't belong, if you smell mold, if you see mold, don't call your insurance company. Call them immediately. They'll give you a free assessment. They'll guide you if you need your insurance company involved, if it's a big job. And, of course, they handle all kinds of disasters. Florida's ElitRestoration.com. We know them personally. They'll be out at Big Storm. You can talk to them if you have a question about something else. But that is your disaster company in the Bay Area. And you can call them 24/7. They will respond immediately. And that's just a great comfort for you. Even if you don't have a problem now, you should remember Florida's Elite Restoration. When you do have a problem, you call them, you'll get a free estimate, and you go from there. All right, now.
By the way, Jeff, hold on, Steve. We have not discussed, and I don't know if it's on your list, but I'm going to throw it out there right now, and you tell me. But I'm calling them the Stonehand Twins, Fournette and Jones. Now, Jones, we've come to expect either a drop pass or a fumble or a reception if he does catch the ball. Guys, I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong thing. I didn't like anything about Fournette. I didn't like his body language. He looked disinterested. I didn't see a lot of effort by Fournette. I'm starting to think there's a little tension brewing inside of him that he's not getting the ball much. And, of course, 198-yard effort by Jones against Carolina is not going to help Fournette's cause in that regard. I said before the season started, he is used to being the man, guys. He was the man. And Jacksonville, a lot of touches, and he came here, and, you know, Arians has been consistent. Jones is our guy, and he's backed it up. Arians keeps telling us, Lee, that Fournette's got great hands. Have you seen that? I know he caught 76 passes last year, but I haven't seen it as a Buck. And, Lee, how about letting LeSean McCoy get on the freaking field against the Chiefs and throw him a couple of screen passes? Let's see what this guy can do.
Well, I got a better question for you, Ira. You know, I keep reading that Shady McCoy is shot and shouldn't be on anybody's roster. Well, what about this Vaughn kid? They drafted him in the third round, and I know at least one pass. Steve even remarked about it. Can't remember the game.
Yeah, it might have been the Green Bay game. You're right, Lee. That's another option right there. But Buck fans are tired of looking at Jones and Fournette coming out of that backfield. Steve, it's not working.
Well,
it's
wait a minute. Ira. First, let me say, I don't think there was any effort issues with Fournette. He had a couple of real He had a couple of real hard runs in there. He had a nice touchdown run. I don't think he was upset about scoring a touchdown, which will help his contract status on Monday Night Football down the road, whoever he plays for next year. So, I mean, I think he probably would like more of a shot, but it's not like Jones even got a ton of touches the other night. Some of those passes by Brady, I mean, they got to be caught. They're not exactly on the money. I think Fournette is the only one who dropped one out of the backfield that was really on the money, but they're so out of sync, and it's like, shouldn't you have that down by now, just practicing drilling out of the backfield? And as Lee kind of mentioned, and as you guys suggested, look, earlier in the season, Brady was far smoother with as a third down back with McCoy and Keyshawn Vaughn a little bit he got to play. So hopefully they give one of those guys a shot again.
You know, and here's the irony, Lee, is that Brady was he was masterful at the flare pass of when he played in Foxborough. Masterful. James White, Dion, you know, whoever it was. Lee, it didn't matter. Sony Michel, Burkhead. Lee, he was masterful. I mean, that was a staple of the New England offense. He wasn't a deep strike thrower. He didn't have that kind of talent at wide receiver. And Edelman's a possession receiver. But Lee, on 3rd and 6, James White's in the game. Everybody knew he was getting that ball. And it was going to be a pass in stride on the money by Brady, and White was going to keep those chains moving, and that's not happening here, Lee.
Well, you know, it's almost Thanksgiving, and it's disturbing if people don't realize that James White has not been on the roster all year. Brady. I'm not talking about Shady McCoy or Rojo or Leonard Fournette. Talking about Brady. Brady's issue last night was not the short ball. Brady's issue was not the intermediate. Brady's issue was the long ball. You know, everybody said, oh, Brady had a horrible game. I don't think his game was that horrible until he decided and was forced. And again, I'm not privy to what was being talked about on the headset. Wasn't privy what Tom Moore was talking to Brady. I could only go by what I saw on the field. Whoever was calling the shots, Brady's long ball was the problem. They kept going to it.
Steve, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. And you've heard me many times on this podcast. I'm staying with it. I like throwing the ball downfield 4 or 5 times a game. The problem is, Steve, the ball's so far off target, you're not even going to get a flag. And that's part of my whole strategy. You know, you're going to get a couple of flags. And, Steve, you mentioned how he's throwing it out of bounds. He's throwing it over the wrong shoulder. So, you know, they got 3 pass interference flags yesterday, Steve, but I can't remember if any of them was on a long ball. Maybe one to Scotty Miller. I can't remember, but I kind of think they were mostly on the shorter balls. But Steve, I don't mind throwing deep 5 times, but put it in the zip code and you'll get a couple of flags.
Ira, how about this for I don't want to use the word humiliation. It's a little bit strong, but you get the idea. So here come the Rams driving down for what becomes the winning field goal, and they have like a 3rd and 6, you know, roughly reasonable field goal range, 20, something like that. And they basically just run left to set up the field goal. I mean, and Matt Gay kicks it, which of course is typical Buccaneers football, but they felt no urgency that they needed a touchdown to go toe to toe with Tom Brady on the road with all those weapons. It was seemed like such a suspect call at the time by Sean McVay to go super conservative and, you know, just run a 2-yard nothing to the left and set up a kick. But, you know, it was the right play, which is just, it's embarrassing.
You know, I thought it was a huge gaffe by McVay at the time. I couldn't believe the call, you know, because Goff was having so much success, Lee, on 3rd down, especially 3rd and manageable. It wasn't 3rd and 15. And he tries to settle for a field goal. And Lee, to top the whole thing off, besides what Steve's talking about as a possible slap in the face at the Buck offense. Lee, he doesn't exactly have Adam Vinatieri in his prime, you know, to walk on the field at that point. This is Matt Gay. You already missed one, right, Lee? You already missed one.
Yeah.
And any Buck fan can tell you, I trust the guy more from 52 than I do from 37. So I thought it was a huge mistake
by McVay, but he ended up, he didn't pay for it because of a bigger gaffe by the guy under center for the home team. But Lee, I thought he went ultra conservative on that play, and Matt Gay's no short thing on that field goal, Lee. Not,
you know, Buffalo moving the ball. Well, said it a couple times already. Brady decided to throw long. Poof.
I don't understand why it's Cameron Bray 30 yards down the field. Steve, explain that one to me. I don't get that one.
I understand. How is anybody? You fill in the blank. Quit throwing long. Damn it. I mean, what does it take until someone has an epiphany at one buck place? Like, oh, I guess we can't throw long. Duh, I guess they're drunk and the bar was right. You know, come on. I don't give a damn who's the name. You know, you pick it. It doesn't matter whose name he was throwing. Don't throw long.
I love your passion, Lee. You know, Steve, to put it in perspective,
man,
I mean, we...
This is the way a playoff game. Guys are getting paid millions of dollars. They can't figure this out.
You can't excuse it because two things. One, they only needed a field goal to extend the game, not a touchdown. And that would change things dramatically if you need more than 3 points. No question about it. And number two, equally as important, Steve, the clock was no factor.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It was ridiculous, Ira. It was just a complete garbage. Clock was no factor. You didn't need to throw deep. You weren't throwing well deep. And you pull out the Cameron Brait play that ended the Bears game. I don't know. It was very frustrating from a guy who's supposed to be an elite decision maker right after you just got a gift of this, from Sean McVay. Now, my gut tells me that McVay set up the field goal because Goff had thrown two picks in the second half and was like, I don't want to push my luck here. I'll put it in the hands of my defense.
Yeah, that's a good point, Steve.
But
point.
Rough stuff there, Ira.
Does it bother either of you two? And I'm thinking on Lee. I think Lee's going to say I don't care. But you know, Brady's taken a little bit of a beating from the national pundits about his post game behavior, going straight to the locker room, and there's Jared Goff in midfield looking, "Where's Brady? Where's Brady? I want to shake his hand." And I could just hear Lee saying right now, "I don't care about that, Ira." Lee, am I right?
It has nothing to do with the wins and losses. I mean, does it look Bush League? Yeah, it looks Bush League.
Would he have shaken his hand if the Bucks won the game? Wait, would he?
He probably would, but again, what's that matter? What does that matter? Does it look bad? Is it going to sell more tickets? Is it going to not sell more tickets? Is it going to give you Bucks another win? It's cheap talk show fodder is what it is.
Ira, if you think I give one crap about that, then you don't know me too well.
I understand.
No, I'm kidding around. I mean, who cares? You know, it'd be one thing if he's got in somebody's face and spit at him or something, but you know, it doesn't look great. But you know, people complain about all this post game stuff they used to not like. Hey, I just lost a game. Let me go exchange jerseys and take a selfie with some other guy on the other team. You know, whatever.
John Madden said years ago they didn't do this because there'd be brawls after games.
And frankly, Ira, I don't know if Brady's this smart, or smart's the wrong word. I don't know if he's this calculating, but you never know. Brady knows that if he blows off Jared Goff, maybe people talk more about that than his horrible deep throwing.
Yeah. Steve, speaking about that, you know, I'm trying to crack through the Brady everything that's programmed. I'm trying. Lee, give me credit for trying. So along the lines of Lee doesn't get on the Zoom calls, I'll repeat the question, which was, Tom, you've authored so many game-winning fourth-quarter drives and overtime, so many. But in lieu of what happened tonight, are you disappointed in yourself? The key word is yourself, Steve. I didn't say are you disappointed in the result. I said are you disappointed in yourself? And I thought maybe I could get something from him about the final snap and what went through his mind and how it was a terrible decision. No, Steve, I get none of that. I get none of that. What I get is, yeah, disappointment is a good word. Again, in general, I want him to be specific to himself. He wouldn't. And then he said, Lee, we've all got to do better. We've all got to do better. I mean, Lee, I can't crack the code, Lee. I can't do it.
You'll get there.
That's why I don't pay any attention to Brady. I have to do more what Steve always says. not about quantity, it's about quality, meaning if a guy is boring, then don't waste your time with it, because if you're bored with it, readers are bored with it. And by the way, Ira, just journalism in the 21st century, I get the sense that fans more and more don't give a damn what players say, because, you know, it's all rehearsed.
Lee, it's not any player. It's the most talked about player in the sport.
If he says crap, that doesn't mean you got to use it. If he says crap, it doesn't mean people are going to eat it. It's boring, it's boring. And I remember one of the very first things I was ever taught in journalism. It's about sports writing. If you think it's interesting, there's a very good chance the reader's going to think it's interesting. And I always take that as, if you think it's boring, there's a very good chance the reader's going to think it's boring.
Steve, here's the way I'll put it. When the locker rooms open up again next summer, if they do, or next season, I will go to Brady's locker, and Mr. DeKemper will have a long talk with Kevin Minter. I think that's beautiful.
No, I'll go talk to Evans, or I'll go talk to Chris Godwin. If Brady's around, I'll talk to him. It's like years ago, it is years ago, when Gerald McCoy was available, the Buffalo herd stampeded to Gerald McCoy. And I'm like, I'd never talk to that with my pet by myself.
It's a different world, guys. We know that. You know, Ira, look, 20 years ago, Sage is prowling around locker rooms. You talk to a guy for 5 minutes, you use three sentences. But now everything is recorded by team media. It's on video. So the players and the fans realize that these guys aren't as exciting sometimes as it may seem. And the players are more careful about what they're saying. And it's changed the whole landscape. And especially this year, it's all, it's all like some sort of sci-fi thing with the Zooms and all the nonsense that goes on. But we'll straighten that out. Ira, now we've heard from all of our beloved sponsors on this podcast, but we have to remind everybody that Black Friday, while it's coming up, it's been on at Bill Curry Ford. $1,000 Amazon gift card for lease or a purchase this month, up to $1,000. Get to BillCurryFord.com. General Manager Sean Sullivan is just so fired up to be making end-of-the-year deals. And what a great way to go shopping this Friday, Saturday. You got extra time this week. Get out to Bill Curry Ford. And may you have no disasters out there, but if you do, Florida's Elite Restoration. Those are our guys. Florida's Elite Restoration. Josh Martin, the boss over there. Big fan of yours, Ira. Big fan of the Buccaneers. He's a big fan of giving people completely free and thorough estimates. If anything happens in their home, if they smell mold or see water where it doesn't belong, or there's any kind of disaster or leak, call them first. They're going to make sure that you don't get screwed by your insurance company, and it's all free, the estimates and the inspections and stuff. So you definitely want to reach out to them. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. And drink Big Storm beer for the holidays. Be a hero. Bring it to your dinner. Bring it to your friend's house. If you're bringing over a gift or whatever, Big Storm beer is the ultimate gift. The tap rooms are open in Cape Coral, in Odessa, and in Clearwater. Beautiful Clearwater, where Sage watches all the road games with Bucks fans. Ira, I'm going to leave us with this because it's a question that we have to hit. Got to get your Sage wisdom. And, of course, we'll have a second podcast this week as we lead up to Ira's beloved Chiefs. He's got a lot of insight there. On Sunday, the man that you call perhaps the greatest offensive mind in the game today, Sean Payton, decided Jameis Winston is not my backup quarterback, even though Teddy Bridgewater was last year and we went 5-0 with a more traditional quarterback. With Taysom Hill on the roster, he made the call to go with a guy who had 18 career passes or completions, I don't remember which one, over a guy who threw 5,000-plus yards last year, and the Saints dominated. Your thoughts, your feelings, the future of Jameis, a lot of fans still care about him.
The first thing I think we need to acknowledge, Lee, is that the Saints are one freaking scary football team at the moment. Their defense has been tremendous the last 3 weeks, starting with the Bucs game. They're giving, and Atlanta, you know, say what you will about the Falcons, but they score points. Cutter's a good offensive coordinator. Ryan's healthy.
and they shut him down. 9 points. Sean Payton has done a fantastic job this year getting basically very, very little from Michael Thomas, who just happens to be the offensive player of the year in 2019, of the year. And the guy's played like two or three games. He had a pretty good game against the Falcons, but he had done nothing all season up to that point. And they sweep the Bucks, and now he goes with Taysom Hill. Lee, the way I look at it, I don't think it's as much of a slap on Jameis Winston as it is Sean Payton saying, maybe to management and maybe to himself, we got to find out what we got with this guy. It's time. He's making a lot of money. Hill, Breeze could retire. There's a pretty good chance he will at the end of this season, especially if they win the Super Bowl. And I got to see what I got here. And Lee, the more I look at this guy, Taysom Hill, he's like a guy that you just say he's a winner. The guy's a winner. He does a lot of things well. Can he throw a pass like Aaron Rodgers? No, he can't. But, man, he's good at a lot of things. He's a lot better athlete than you think looking at the guy, and they don't miss a beat. Now they're 6-0 without Breeze the last 2 years. I mean, that's a fantastic job by Payton. He very well could be the best coach in this league, under Bill Belichick. You got Reed, you got Tomlin, you got Harbaugh, but Peyton's right there. And this is one of his great jobs, Lee. They look like they might get the number one seed in the NFC. And, you know, this defense, this Trey Hendrickson, the guy that abused Donovan Smith, Lee, a couple of weeks ago, the guy looks like a hell of a player. I mean, he's on track to get about 18 sacks. Nobody ever heard of him. So he's been abusing a lot of guys. And, boy, I'll tell you what, I don't see any weakening in the Saints, and Breeze will be back by the end of the season. I don't think he's coming back in a week or two. I think that's crazy. And why would you bring him back, Lee? They got a cushion. And he'll get the job done. So if you're a Saints fan, Lee, it's all good right now. In fact, it's all great.
As you're speaking, Ira, I'm watching the replay of Monday night's game on NFL Network. And can someone help out Stan Kroenke? I guess he can't part with any of his Walmart stock and buy some Tide. Those uniforms. Can they buy some laundry detergent? There was some guy on Twitter last night trying to tell me, well, the actual color scheme is bone. First, never heard of a color scheme called bone. Number two, only people give a damn about that are graphic design artists. Just spare me.
Lee, you're supposed to be talking about Taysom Hill, Mr. DeKemper.
No, I'm not, because this is a Bucs podcast. That's the Saints quarterback. And the only thing I'll say about that, and I knew Sean Payton a little bit way, 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 way back to our Eastern Illinois days. But what I'm going to say is, since Steve and I started up our website, there's one thing I've learned, and I always tell people about this. Never underestimate the egos of people in the NFL. Never underestimate egos. So many of these guys just refuse to say or look in the mirror or refuse to even think that, you know what, maybe their glorious game plans or their glorious schemes or their astute coaching ability, maybe they're doing something wrong. Their egos blind them. And I don't doubt one second that part of this Taysom Hill, who I can't stand, I think he's a two-bit Tim Tebow, that Sean Payton's ego is like, I'm smarter than the other guy in the room. I can win with a guy who can't throw the ball. I can do it. Me, Sean Payton, ego, Super Bowl winner. Me, I don't doubt for a second that ego plays a part in that decision. Now, can someone please launder the Rams uniforms?
I guess Lee doesn't want to talk about the first place team in the NFC South.
Is this a Saints podcast? You want me to break down Trey Hendrickson? You want me to break down Michael Thomas? You want me to break down Marshawn Lattimore? Click, 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 click. All the Bucks fans are clicking off your podcast.
All right, Sage.
Would the Bucks be 6-0 without Tom Brady?
I don't know if they're going to be. I would lay money they're not going to beat the Chiefs. I'm not confident they're going to beat the Vikings. And I don't know if they're going to beat the Dixie Chicks two games. I don't know that because I don't think this team's playing well. I have no confidence they're going to mop up on the Vikings. I've been sort of impressed with the Vikings all year. I like Mike Zimmer. A lot of people don't. I like him. They play tough defense. Once in a while, Kirk Cousins actually plays really good. They have a hell of a good running back. They have some good receivers to throw to. I'm not confident the Bucs are going to be in the playoffs. Hate to say it, but that's where I stand right now.
Steve, if the Bucs don't win 10 games, at least after a 7-3 start, that means you lost at least 4 of your last 6. There's going to be cataclysmic changes at one Buck, Steve. Let's just put it like that.
Look, there's no reason for them to be a 9-win team this season. So, yeah, that would be a disaster, especially if it meant no playoff berth. But frankly, 9 wins probably would get you in the playoffs based on the math that exists right now. But, you know, that's why they play the games, Ira. And I must say, watching that Saints game, the adjustments made by the Bucs offense, they looked like Bill Walsh compared to the no adjustments that Dirk Koetter made against the Saints. It was every bit as bad as the Bucs playing the Saints a couple of weeks ago. I did watch the Vikings game from the weekend on the condensed game, and gosh, they don't play any defense. I think they're like 27th ranked. They should be a good tonic for the Bucs, but we got to get there first.
Yeah, that was a real bad loss by Minnesota. Just when they were surging, you can't lose to the Dallas Cowboys if you're a serious playoff contender. if the game means something, I'm with you.
All right, Ira, we'll close with you. You'll close, Ira, here with giving us the critical gambling numbers. I'm not sure if this is available yet on DraftKings or FanDuel, but what is the over-under on how many pounds you gain this Thanksgiving weekend?
I got to go with 3.5. That could put me that could put my belt into another notch area. We don't want that. And all the tennis in the world ain't going to erase those 3.5 pounds, gentlemen. So I might need a bigger bed. I'll let you think about that. But I'm out of here.
I got a question for you, real quick. I remember you're out of here.
Go ahead, Lee. Go ahead.
It's pertinent, and I think more people are interested than us talking about Taysom Hill. the Hall of Fame had their next round of 25. I know it's, you know, Simeon Rice wasn't in there. Rodney Barber got passed. Of course, John Lynch did. Speak to this.
All right. We had a chance to have 3 members of the iconic Buck defense make it to the semifinalist round, but Simeon dropped off. He's been there before, and now he's dropped off. That's an ominous sign. We're sort of out of sight, out of mind. And before Buck fans go crazy about Simeon Rice, who was a heck of a player and could have been the Super Bowl MVP if they would have voted, not at halftime, and so Dexter Jackson got it at halftime. But there's a guy named Leslie O'Neill. I don't know, most people don't remember the guy who played for the Chargers, the D-lineman. He had 132 career sacks. 10 more than Simeon. He doesn't get any respect either. So Simeon's not the only guy. He's not the only one. Of course, we're honed in on him because we're in Tampa. But Rondé, Lynch is going to be in the room, and there's one more cut from 25 to 15. And those are the guys that get discussed on the day before the Super Bowl. I think it'll probably be by a Zoom call this year. First time ever. I can't see them having 45 selectors in a conference room at the Tampa Convention Center. I don't think that's going to happen. So I think it'll be a virtual meeting. That means when I stand up and try to, change minds of Peter King and people, I'm going to have to do it through a computer. And, of course, if DeKemper was a selector, he'd have to bow out because he can't get on a Zoom call. Steve, we understand that.
I can get on the Zoom, but I got to go. I got to jump through 8 hoops to do it. But
I gotta give our man Isbit some credit because, Steve, I do read the site religiously, and I could tell from reading that it was pure Isbit, absolute Isbit, talking about Rondé Barber, who has never made the jump from 25 to 15. He always gets chopped out at that point. I think it's been 3 previous years in a row. He can't squeeze in to that finalist round when people get to discuss the brilliant career of Rondé Barber, the versatile stat machine, biggest play in franchise history. None of that ever comes up in discussion because he doesn't make it into the room. And Steve, you wrote an excellent article. It doesn't come natural for Rondé to be a self-promoter, but if that's what it takes, Steve, to clear that final hurdle, which we're probably going to know maybe in another month or 5 weeks, who gets in that room for February 6th. And I'm sure hoping Rondé Barber is one of those 15. I'm sure Lynch will be, but Rondé has never been. And a lot of people think he has at least an equally as compelling case for Canton as Lynch. It's a different kind of case. It's more stat-based than Lynch's, but it's compelling nevertheless. So, Steve, you did a good job. I think you're taking it personal, Steve, and I don't blame you because I feel the same way. Let's discuss Rondé Barber and give him a fair hearing, Stephen.
Well, I hear you, Sage, and I appreciate your love there, Ira. Look, Rondé's got no shot, zero, flat out zero shot, none. I will buy you an unbelievable feast and cartons of beer if he is a finalist this year because he won't campaign for himself. And when you've got 25 guys vying for 15 spots and they're all great players, it's all about politics. And Rondé won't play it. He won't do it, even though he could be all over the national shows and schmoozing this one and that one and playing golf here and getting himself out there, because it's become very political. As much as you guys don't want to admit it, it is, because that's just how it is. And he won't do it, and so he's got no shot. It sucks.
Yeah, it would be a shame, Lee, because, Lee, you watched Rondé Barber during the glory days. And that game again in Philly, Lee, which I think you could argue, seriously argue, that it might have been more important than the Super Bowl. I mean, I'm serious. That NFC title game. Yeah, I mean, the fact that your last 2 years ended, you know, in Veterans Stadium with terrible losses, and you can't beat that team. They beat you during the regular season in 02, and you shut down the vet, and there's no question. It's not even the discussion. Who was the best player on the field that day? Rondé Barber. There's no doubt about it, and it goes beyond just the final, you know, clinching interception. The guy was fabulous all day long. He had a strip sack on a blitz. He's all over the place. And, of course, he drove Donovan McNabb crazy. And that's a signature moment, Lee. And sometimes, you know, selectors look for those signature moments. And Rondé's got one.
Sage, it would take something unique. And I think it could be orchestrated. I mean, can't somebody get to John Gruden and say, John, do us a favor here. Get on your next news conference and say, oh, by the way, before I sign off, all you voters out there, Rondé Barber belongs in the Hall of Fame, and if anybody wants to know, they can call me up. You know, I mean, somebody's got to juice the guy. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. There's too many names.
Let's hope a miracle occurs, Stevie. Let's hope.
It's just unfair when they label him a gimmick cornerback, and he was just a system cornerback. That's so unfair because there's so many guys in Canton and so many guys who were excellent at what they did, because they were system players. And the first one that comes to mind is Joe Montana. You can say that about a lot of guys. He did what he was asked to do at a supremely high level. And that's what Rondé did. And I just think that's weak sauce when people derisively dismiss a player because he was a system player.
I thought, Steve, I thought his football intelligence was off the charts, and that was a big part of his success. Just like football intelligence is what's driving the Kemper most of the time.
You know how it goes, Ira. You'll start getting
thereof, maybe.
You know how it goes, Ira. You'll start getting the phone calls saying, "We don't have much more time to get Sam Mills in the Hall of Fame. It's not fair. We got to get it done, but we're not playing politics." Yeah, I mean, come on. All right, get out of here, Ira. Stuff your face, and we're going to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. We may have our second podcast out on Thanksgiving, so pay attention. And all right, get out of here, Ira.